Okay, folks, we're just coming up on 7:30 now, so I'm going to mute all. And everybody does have the ability to unmute themselves. Please feel free to do so. If you do, please mute yourself afterwards, after you ask your question or make a comment, so we'll keep background noise to a minimum. Just a reminder that we are doing an audio recording. The audio recording, the deck, and the contents of the chat window will go up on our website later on this evening. And we probably will have a bunch of time tonight. We don't have a lot of agenda items, as you might have seen on the pre-meeting deck that went by. And so if you have other questions or suggestions or whatever, please feel free to line them up. You can either unmute yourself after the main presentation or enter into the chat window, and we'll pick them up after we go through the main deck. And with that, Alan, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And I'm going to send it right back to Chris because he's got a computer basics item for us.
Okay, and... Okay, so I'm going to be doing it as a demo, and I have to play around with screen resolutions, and things change terribly on me, so bear with me if I have some difficulties or something like that. So the idea about this is the ability to use your mouse to interact with inactive windows. So as you all know, the active window is the window that has the focus. If you type in the windows that has the focus is where those keystrokes will actually go. But typically you can have, you know, you might have many, many windows open at any given point in time, and you might want to refer to information in another window while you're working in, say, word processor or whatever. So switching between program windows, I said, you know, is tedious, but then, well, it can be tedious because some people can deal with this a lot easier than some others can, including me. So think of a scenario where you're using one program. So you're typing in or you're reading, you're scrolling. So say a word processor and you're editing a document and you want to refer to information that's in another program window, say web browser. And so what you would normally do is you switch to that other program. You scroll around to find the information that you want, then you switch back to your original program, and then you continue on with your editing. So what if you could scroll through another program window without actually switching to it? Next. What you would end up doing is eliminating two of the bullet points above where you are actually switching to the other program and then switching back to the original program. I find this actually quite handy. And so I'm going to take over. Sharing the screen. I'm going to share my entire desktop, which is going to be fraught with difficulties, I think, at this resolution that I have it. But hopefully, by increasing the scaling of all my windows on here, people will actually be able to see a little bit better what's going on. So let me just go and I'll minimize that and eliminate that. Okay, so say I've got this case here where I have, let me just get rid of one other thing. Okay, so I have a document on the right-hand side here that I'm editing, and I can be scrolling around and I can work in this document, and so, you know, I can be editing additional information. And then I have my web browser over on the left-hand side. Now, normally what people will do is if I have some information on this web page that I want to refer to, I would click on that web page to activate it, and then I might mouse down or I could scroll down, find the information that I actually want to refer to. So say it's like, check out our presentations at the Ottawa Public Library. So, you know, I might decide, oh yeah, it's the Ottawa Public Library that I actually want to refer to. And so I would then click back in the right-hand window, and I might then type in Ottawa Public Library or whatever. So it's that clicking back and forth that is actually a little bit unnecessary. So the way to change the setting is if I go to the Settings app and I go to Devices and then I go to Mouse and then this option here, Scroll Inactive Windows When I Hover Over Them. That's off by default, I believe. So if you turn that on, it changes its behavior. So now, before I go any further, I'll point out that I'm using a program called Keystroke. And so you can see the highlight around my mouse pointer. If I left click the mouse button, you should be seeing. Actually, let me just make sure that I'm seeing things correctly on my other computer. So you end up seeing that the left mouse button is highlighted in red. So you know that I'm pressing the left mouse button. If I click the right mouse button, you see red on the right-hand side. And if I just scroll the mouse wheel, you'll see that the mouse wheel lights up in blue, and then the triangle shows you what direction I'm actually scrolling the mouse in. So you can actually see what it is I am doing with my mouse. So if I'm in here and I'm editing this document, and then I want to refer to something that is over on the other side, what I can do is I just move the mouse over there. I don't click. I just scroll up or down on that particular web page or the document, whatever it happens to be. When I find the information that I've got, I don't even have to move the mouse pointer back. The document is still the active document. And so if I just start typing, I don't actually have to click on it before I can actually be typing text and it goes into that window, because I've never clicked on anything else. The right-hand document remains the in-focus window that is on my computer. Any questions about that?
There's nothing in the chat, I don't think. So if anybody has any questions, it looks like a really neat technique, by the way.
Yeah, I find it very, very handy, because often, now, if I have to actually select text, of course, I'm going to have to click on that window in order to select the text or whatever, and then click back. But if all I'm doing is referring to something, I don't actually have to click on that window, and I can continue editing in my document. Now, there is another technique that can be very handy. Yeah, I'm just going to try and find this here on my other computer. So there's another option that you can have, which is called Activate Window on Hover. And this can be useful, I think. A lot of people talk about it being most useful where you have a trackpad as opposed to a mouse, that they find it a bit of a pain when you click, that you actually are, and even if you're clicking with a mouse, you're actually setting the mouse pointer to that particular location on that window. So what you can do is change a setting that, rather than clicking on the window, all you have to do is hover the mouse over top of it, and it will become the active window. Let me show you how that happens. So yeah, for this one, you have to go into Control Panel and bring up Control Panel. And on this one here, we have to go into Ease of Access Center and then make the mouse easier to use. This is one of the things that has not yet been migrated over to the Settings app. So the only way to get to this is through Control Panel. If anybody wonders about using Control Panel or how to get to it, the easiest way I find is to just click the Start button, start typing in Control, and it will end up at the top of your list, and it'll load up that way. Okay. So once I'm in there, you can see here there's an option down here called Activate a Window by Hovering Over It with the Mouse. I'm going to click on that, and I'm going to click on the Apply button. And then I'm just going to minimize this. Now the way that this works is you'll see that rather than a left mouse button or a right mouse button, if I just move and hover over that window, it becomes the active window. Okay? And then I could use, you know, whatever means I want to move around within that document. Now I have actually changed what window has the focus at that point in time, but I didn't have to click on it. So where that can sort of be handy, if I come back over to here and I've got my cursor actually in Protecting Your Passwords, and now this is the active window over here, if I go over and I click on the other side, it'll make the cursor jump to wherever I click. Whereas if I just hover over top of it, you can see now all of a sudden where I've got the Let me just see if it shows up correctly on my side. Yeah, you can see the vertical bar that is my insertion point. So I haven't actually moved the insertion point to anywhere else. So that hover over and activate the window leaves the cursor position where it was in that window previously. I don't particularly find that useful, but it is another way of dealing with that idea of moving back and forth between two programs. So try them out. See if you like one or the other. They can easily be turned off if you don't like that particular effect. But I think you might find one or both of those to be useful. And that's it.
There's no questions until you tried it.
Yeah.
Bill thinks it's a great trick. And Micheline says to switch windows and then stops. So I don't know. So I don't think there's anything current in the...
Okay, we can come back to this afterwards if people try it during the meeting or whatever. And if you have any questions, we can certainly revisit the issue later on.
Okay.
So with that, I'll turn it back over to Alan.
All right. And the next thing we have, are you seeing the sharing bandwidth slide?
Limit reserve bandwidth is what
yes,
I'm seeing.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I've lost the, there we are. All right, so this was a question that came in a few days ago from Stuart, and he notes that his old router had a quality of service scheduler on the control panel, and he found out recently that Windows has the same thing built in. And he sent this link to this article, which talks about adjusting the, they call it, reservable bandwidth, but Stuart's not quite sure why it has any benefit. And so I took a look at the site, and if anybody has any better information than what I'm going to say, please chip in, because I really only got this stuff off the internet. I've never played with this, and I actually don't want to, as you'll find out in a minute. And so reservable bandwidth. So basically what happens is Windows reserves 20% of your internet bandwidth, your download ability essentially, for what it calls high priority tasks. Now, so that means you've got 80% to play with, and the high priority tasks, whatever they are, take 20% at a minimum. However, the problem is when I look on the web, and in this article in particular, it's not really clear what tasks are high priority. The article seems to be wrong. It says that a high priority task is Windows Update. And Chris pointed out to me that actually Windows Update runs as extremely low priority and gets out of the way when anything happens. So what exactly a high priority task is, I'm not sure. I imagine this limiting the reservable bandwidth basically says, well, let's get rid of this 20% reserve and don't reserve anything, and then we'll have 100% of our internet bandwidth available for our use, and the hell with Windows, essentially. However, the other thing is that Windows is only reserving this 20% for the high priority. If there are no high priority tasks, you get 100% of the bandwidth available to you. So I don't understand what the point is. And as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't touch this thing with a barge pole. My advice is to just leave things alone and let Windows get on with things in the background. However, if you must tinker, then what you have to do is go into Settings and Windows Update, and then you go to Advanced Options, Delivery Optimization, and then Advanced Options again. And sure enough, when you get to that final page, it tells you that they're dynamically optimizing the amount of bandwidth for Windows apps and updates. But you can set a different limit if you want to, essentially. Now, before you get there, on this delivery optimization page, before you click on the advanced options again, And you'll note that there's this allow downloads from other PCs. Now, I don't have a network, so I have this turned off. And I certainly don't want other people downloading stuff onto my computer. Now, Chris has a network, and he's happy to allow the second option down there, the radio button that says PCs on my local network. So he will let his own network share download information, but he doesn't check on the final one, which is and PCs on the internet. That's everybody else being able to access your computer potentially. Probably not a good idea. So if you go now to the advanced settings or advanced options, whatever it was called, on this optimization page, then first thing you do is you get a page where you can tweak the amount of bandwidth that you allow for downloading updates in the background and in the foreground and all kinds of sliders and boxes you can fill in with numbers here. You can give whatever permissions or allowable limits, whatever you wish. And then a bit further down the same page, there's the same kind of thing for upload settings. So if you want to limit how much bandwidth is used for uploading, then you can play around with these sliders and change things also. However, personally, I don't see the point, so I haven't implemented any of that stuff. I don't see any. Oh, somebody says, if I saw it on the internet, it must be true. I guess that must be true, right? Okay. I don't know whether, have we got Tom joined us?
Not yet, no.
Okay, because the next item on the agenda was going to be Tom talking about checking up on websites. So we'll skip that one and we'll move on to Bob. Bob has got part three of his organizing music files series ready. So Bob, if you're going to share your screen.
Okay, here we go. And let me just, before I get on to this, the idea of allowing downloads from other PCs on your own network is no, don't do that. And I'll do a piece in a few weeks and explain why that's not a good idea. Because especially if you have one of the other PCs turned on at the time, you will get all sorts of bad things that you will not want to have to deal with. Anyway, so this is the next in my video and audio tools series. Last section, we covered organizing all your digital, musical, and related files using just good file management. And it all looks simple enough, but how do you get started and how do you make it easy? And just for your convenience and downloading ease, I've included the last presentation, it's Appendix 2 in this presentation if you want to download it all together. And now, my digital music collection, and maybe some of your own, grew more by accident than planning. You know, I started out by downloading a few songs here. I'd rip a couple of CDs there. I downloaded some music videos on yet another computer because that's where the particular software was. Friends would send me tunes and videos, and before I knew it, there was chaos. I'd be looking for a particular song or video to play or to make a mixtape for the car or to pass on to a friend, and I have no idea where it was. And it's curious, the term mixtape still applies even when you're doing it on a USB stick or in any other sort of technology. The old terms still stick around. Okay. So you may have your music files on your desktop computer, your laptop computer, a tablet, maybe a couple are on your spouse's devices or your kids' devices. You might have something on your smartphone, your backup drives. And in my case, I had USB keys all over the place, like different rooms, different cars, some at work, some in my laptop bag. If I looked in the pocket of any pair of pants or jacket or coat that I wore regularly, there'd be a USB key. I found one under the cushion of my couch. And on each of these devices, the files could be all over the place in different directories, sub-sub-subdirectories, etc. And I really needed to get organized on all this stuff. I guess my first question is, where do I even start? But being a good senior project manager and all that, I knew the key was to take a big task and break it down into smaller, easy-to-do tasks. And that way it wouldn't seem like such a big deal. It wouldn't seem so insurmountable. So the general idea behind getting all your digital music files organized is to have a central, what I call master location, for all the related files to be migrated to and copied from. Ultimately, you'll probably want this on your main computer, the one you use the most. But when you first start to get organized, it's probably best to put this location on an appropriate capacity USB stick or USB drive. So you want to make sure that there's more capacity on this drive than all the music-related files you're likely to encounter and move over. By putting it on a USB device, you can move it from computer to computer to tablet to whatever as you harvest all these files and put them in one place. The next best choice would be to have the master file on your main computer or the computer you use the most. And in this case, you'll need a USB stick or a USB drive to migrate these files from your other devices. Now, last week we covered the music top-level directory, and that's the key to getting all your stuff organized. You can locate this directory in any one of a number of locations. You can name it Music, My Music, Jill's Music, or whatever suits you best. Keeping in mind, in some cases, Windows might have its own Music or My Music directory, and iTunes will certainly make a music directory if you download stuff from iTunes. So you can locate this directory under C Users, My Username, and then whatever name you want to give it besides Music or My Music, or C Users, My Username, Documents, and then whatever you want to name it, or whatever works best for you. You might have some good ideas of your own. And then try not to bury this music directory too far down in the directory structure, because Windows has a 256 character limit to file names, including the path info. So you don't want to burden it with that. And in a lot of cases, Windows and most apps can deal with longer names, but you don't want to take a chance with this just in case. Okay, so how do you go about getting organized? Step one is on the device you choose to put your music, My Music, Jill's Music, or whatever directory on. You create the that music top level directory. Next, you create the subdirectories: compilations, cover art, miscellaneous soundtracks, and special songs. And last session, I detailed what all these were all about. So, step two is the actual migration. You start migrating the songs, the albums, music videos, any of this music-related digital files from wherever they are, be it USB sticks, other devices, other computers, tablets, into your main master music directory. Now, as you do the migrations, remember to create a subdirectory for each significant artist. And that would be an artist you have one or more albums of, several individual files of, or whatever. And if you don't have enough files for a particular artist to bother creating a subdirectory for, you can put all the onesies, twosies directly into your music directory. Now, as a warning here, because Chris and Alan have given many excellent presentations on backups and why you should back up and backup tools and how to do it and everything, you should keep a copy of the material that you're migrating on the source device until you have fully and properly backed up the master device you're moving all these files to. Because you never want to have any file on only one device. So if it's not on a backup device, then it better be on a second device. Now, as you do this migration, this is a great opportunity to make sure all the song file names are in a basic, consistent format. And as a minimum, this would be artist name, song name. You might want to make sure the tags are complete and correct and all that. But to make this easy and not a burdensome exercise, you want to remember that your prime goal is to gather everything together. If doing renaming and tagging and everything as you go is going to slow down this exercise, you might want to keep any of the renaming during the migration and any of the tagging and all that to just those files where you need a proper file name to even know what the heck it is. And those are the files where, before you migrate it, you sort of got to double-click on it and see, well, what is this? Okay. You want to set your own schedule, and you might want to decide to prioritize a couple of key locations to migrate to first. And these are the motherload locations, like it might be your iTunes download directory because you download a lot from iTunes. It might be your video download directory. It might be your CD ripping directory. It could be that 128 gigabyte thumb drive with 1,000 tunes on it that a good friend gave you. A really great friend would give you a 2,000 tunes thumb drive. It's not a big deal if you just want to take a few minutes here or there to get the most important stuff done what would be in your case an as and when you need it basis. You know, so it could take you several months to get all the most important stuff done. But you do what you need when you need it, and it keeps the workload down to a minimum on a regular basis. So it's quite conceivable you may never actually finish this. You may never get around to downloading the one or two or three music-related files off this computer you only use occasionally when you're traveling. The main thing is to get the most important stuff to you all together in one place so you can at least find it when you want it. If it's all in one place rather than spread across several devices, it really lessens the burden, and that gets you 90% of the benefits with probably 10 to 20% of the work. So step three, that's the cleanup. You've gotten most of your important files over to your one master directory. And so the cleanup may consist of things like putting the file names into consistent format, doing any tagging, and sorting anything into like various artists' files and albums and all that into the appropriate subdirectories. And this you can do on an as-required basis. And this might be something like, let's say you're making a mixtape for your car or to give somebody else and you want the tagging info to be correct. It used to drive me crazy. I just, you know, randomly throw stuff onto a USB key to play in my car. And there's this display looking at me with no idea of what the song was or the artist was or anything else. And it would randomly try and, if it didn't have an album cover art in there, it would randomly try and choose something from a central database, which would always be wrong. So any additional cleanup you want to do is really up to you. And that's the sort of 80% of the work that gives you the 10 or 20% of the value. So that decision is up to you and how complete you want it to be. So let's have a quick look at some of the music sources and what you'll likely need to clean up with each one of these. iTunes, and I'm going to do another future session on iTunes. Not a very long session, but on iTunes tips, tricks, and most importantly, the glitches and gotchas. If you download music from iTunes, they will already organize it into a directory for each artist with a subdirectory for each album. And the subdirectory will have the actual song files. And so even if you buy only one song by that artist, it'll give you the an artist subdirectory and then a subdirectory for the song that you've bought off them. The actual song file names won't have the artist's name in them, and so you might want to add that in, and you may want to remove the track number from the file name if it isn't a soundtrack album. I talked about that last session. If you get the music by ripping it from CDs, the song file names and the tags may only have track 1, track 2, track 3. If it's a CD on a relatively obscure artist and album, a really popular CD on a popular artist, they may have fairly complete information, including the album name, the artist name, track number, the title of each track, the length of each track, and sometimes you even have the correct album artwork. However, you'll need to provide any missing info for the file names and tags, and that quite often includes the cover art for the tags. If you want all your song file names to have a consistent format, you'll need to edit the file names because, as I mentioned before, it might only be track 1, track 2, track 3 as the file names. The CD ripper should have all the song files for in a separate directory for each and every album you rip. And some rippers will create a directory for the artist with a subdirectory for each album you rip. And some of them can connect with central databases and fill in the correct info on the tags. Okay, YouTube downloads. If you download music videos or just a song from the videos from YouTube or other similar sources, the file names will be the title of the video. And any long file names will be cut short. The file name may not have the artist name or the song title or any other information you want, so you'll need to edit the file names so that they mean something to you and or in some sort of consistent file name format that you've decided to use. And it's a good idea to get in the habit of this file renaming right after you download the video while you still have the video loaded into YouTube. Because you go down into the information section and get the information you need. None of the files you download this way will be tagged, and so you'll need to do whatever tagging you want to do on your own. And other being in the download directory of the tool, there'll be no organization of the files into subdirectories. Video capture tools, if you download videos from or just a soundtrack from the videos using a video capture tool, the file names will have no information. It'll be a sequential number, like, you know, debut video capture 001, 002, 003. So you need to provide a proper file name. And again, it's a good idea to do this right after the capture while you still have the video loaded in your browser. And of course, there'll be no tagging of the song files. So if you want good tagging, you have to do this yourself. And other than being the download directory of the tool you use, there'll be no organization of the files. So you've done the basic organization here. What do you do ongoing to keep things organized? Some of the files will already be in a known location just because of the process and the software tools you use to get them. Such as you've just mentioned, direct downloads like from iTunes, video and song downloads from YouTube, video captures from other sites, and CD rips from ripping tools. So there's four known locations you have that will tell you where all these files are. So if you don't get them migrated to your master location, then you have four good sub-choices to look at it if you're looking for a particular file or set of files. So on an ongoing basis, you can leave the files there as you gather them and then do the migrations to your master directory on a as and when you need them. You might want to do them once a month, or you might want to do it when the mood hits you and do them all. You might want to do it when the mood hits you and just grab the ones you want because you're making a mixtape or whatever. But at least you'll know where the files are likely to be if you can't find them in your master directory. Any music-related files that you get from more random sources, for example, from a friend on a USB stick, should be put into your master directory shortly after you get them. So you don't go back to the situation of having files all over the place again. Any music-related files you have on other devices, for example, mixtapes or whatever, should be copies of the files you already have in your master music directory. So if you have music files elsewhere, you know that, you can reformat that USB drive and use it for some more tunes to put in your in your car again. And just as a note, your master music directory should be backed up on a regular basis, just like all of your files. And I think Chris and Alan will agree with this. just as a note here, there's a great file management tool called Total Commander. You can use Windows File Exploder, Exposer, Disposer. Oh, Explorer. Yeah, that's the right name, Explorer. To do the file organization and renaming, or you can use a tool like Total Commander. And you can tell from this that I'm not a big fan of some of the Microsoft tools. I've been using various file management tools similar to Total Commander from DOS 3. Something onwards. So OPCUG and specifically Chris has done several presentations of Total Commander over the years as it has evolved. And if you're for reorganizing files, Total Commander is really easy to use. Because it has a two pane window interface that makes moving and copying files between directories or creating new directories and other operations really easy to do because you can visualize the operations much more easily than you can with File Explorer. One of the great things about this, if you're renaming an entire album's worth of songs into the format you want, Total Commander has a really great group rename utility, and you hit Control M to bring this up. It's very useful in renaming an album's worth of songs, especially if it's like a four album set or a four disc set, and there's like 50 songs that you got to rename. And so it makes doing something like putting the artist name at the beginning of the file names really, real easy to do, with several files all at the one time. And, if you click on the Total Commander link up top here, that takes you to the home website. And at the bottom here, I've included a link to a Tech Radar review of the best file managers, and Total Commander is their number one choice.
The links are in the chat window as well.
Okay. Now, we may take a closer look at the latest version of Total Commander at some point in the near future, but I'm not sure on that yet. So next time around, we'll look at some iTunes tips, tricks, and glitches, mostly glitches, just so you get a little bit of warning if you use this tool. It's a great tool for downloading songs, but it has its issues. And just as a reminder, if you download the deck, Appendix 1 is a format of the file names, and Appendix 2 is last week's presentation on good file management. So how are we doing for time so far?
We've got lots of time available.
Okay. Just a little thing here. Let me just bring it up. One of the points about organizing your music files is when you try to organize files using just good file management, you have to choose what's the most important criteria is to you to sort or search on. And then you have to organize the directories and the subdirectories and the files accordingly. And for the music collection, the most important criteria is usually artist. And so that's what I used in all the organizing using file management information to organize the music collection around. And I included a few workarounds or cheats to get around these limitations. We can use a single key criteria to sort some other items like movies. For example, you sort any digital movies you have by movie title. If you want more information on something else, like, you know, what are the names of all the movies produced by what's his name? There's George Lucas, for example. You go to Wikipedia, go to George Lucas, look at George Lucas's filmography, and there are the names of all the movies he's done. You get, and if you want a list of all the movies, you know, if you want to find out what the stars were in a movie, again, you go to the movie in Wikipedia, and there's a list of all the stars. You click on the star's name, there's a star's biography. So you can sort of fudge that on something like movies. But let's say you're trying to organize your photo collection. Is it a picture of Cindy? Or is it a picture of a sunset with Cindy in the picture? Or is it a picture of a beach with Cindy and the sunset happening to be in the picture? Or is it a picture of your 1992 trip to Barbados? So it's hard to pick a key criteria here. Same goes with recipes. Is it a chicken recipe? Is it an Italian cuisine recipe? Is it a soup recipe? Is it a Mediterranean diet recipe? Or is it a crock pot recipe? If it's books, is it To Kill a Mockingbird? Is it a book by Harper Lee? Is it a Southern Gothic novel? Or is it a hardcover, softcover, or an ebook? So some of these other categories, you know, it's hard to sort out, and I'm not going to give you any tips or tricks here because I have my own issues with trying to get all this stuff organized. But these give me an idea that trying to organize some of these things with multiple key criteria can be a bit of an issue. And there's some databases you can download that help you with some of these things. It's not an easy thing to do, and these are the reasons for it. So that's all I got to say for tonight. And let me stop the share here and turn it back over to Alan and Chris.
Okay, thanks very much, Bob. We've still got a few minutes for questions, so.
Yeah, I noticed a comment in here. The Total Commander is hard for photos because of the lack of thumbnails. If you download OrphanView, there's a related program that comes with it. Let me just get the name of it here. Called OrphanView Thumbnails, and you can load a full directory worth of thumbnails onto your screen there, and you can set the size of the thumbnails and on some other criteria, and that's a great way to sort them. And you can use control right click to select certain thumbnails in there, and then right click and choose to either delete all selected files, copy all selected files to another directory, or move all selected files to another directory, and other operations quite easily. So for sorting your photos there, the OrphanView Thumbnails is a great program to use for that.
The Total Commander actually does have a thumbnail view as well. The standard toolbar in Total Commander has reading the source as a thumbnail view. What I don't like about it is, unlike Windows, where you can select small, medium, or large icon, thumbnail views fairly easily, in here, basically you get one size. You can go into the configuration and you can actually change the size of the thumbnails, but it's a little tedious if you want to switch back and forth between small and medium or large or whatever. But you can actually have thumbnails view, and then you can switch easily back to your normal file view as well. So that's doable. I'll show you that, Linda, next time I'm over, or you can find it on the standard toolbar. If you just hover over it, it'll say source thumbnail view is the tooltip for it.
Okay, thanks. Thanks again, Bob. So we have a question came into the chat. Micheline had her laptop crash, and if I can drag this file, this is the screen image when the thing crashed. Now, does anybody recognize that? It's not very well, not a great resolution. I tried to blow it up in GIMP. But I personally don't recognize it off the top of my head.
That is actually the one of the power toys. And if you hold down, when you have it loaded by default, if you click on, let me see, what is it? I thought it was, yeah, if you press the start button for more than a couple of seconds, and you have the power toys loaded, you'll get that pop up, which shows you all of your hotkeys that you can use.
Oh, that's what it is. It's kind of an index to the hotkeys.
Yeah.
And I see open settings and open File Explorer and that kind of stuff. So how do you get rid of it?
Just hit Escape. We'll get rid of it.
There you go. So there you go, machine. Hit Escape and it'll go
away,
hopefully.
You don't even have to hit Escape. You should just let go of the Windows key and it goes away.
Okay. There we go. All right. Any other questions or topics that people want to chat about? Michelin wants to know what's its name. It's one of the power toys.
Yeah, it's just, let me just see what they call it. I have it turned on, but I typically never really run into it unless I hold down the Windows key, which I don't. But let me just see what they actually call it. If I can get the power toys to come up. It is called Shortcut Guide. So in the power toys is second from the bottom. And so if you don't want that to happen, you can go in there, you can toggle it off. But I don't find it annoying because it's just it should only pop up if you hold down the Windows key. And so if you don't hold down the Windows key, you should never actually see it. I think you can actually set the duration before showing in milliseconds. So the default is 600 milliseconds or 6/10 of a second. But you could change that to 2,000 or something like that, presumably, and you'd have to hold it down for 2 seconds before it will actually pop up.
Yeah, so this is Power Toys, and here is the shortcut guide.
Yep, that's it.
If I run that. All right, and then what do I have to do? I have to hold the Windows key down?
Yeah, just hold down the Windows key. And you should get it.
Or not.
I don't know. It works for me. If I hold down the Windows key for, it probably won't come across on the Zoom.
Doesn't seem to be.
It's strictly a keyboard thing. It's not, you can't click on the start button. It is, holding down the Windows key on the keyboard.
Yeah. Okay, well.
Doesn't work for you?
I'm not getting it. No, I'm not getting it. So I don't know. Maybe I have to turn it on, do it.
Well, there is a toggle switch. I thought when I saw it, it looked like it was on. But if you go back in there.
Seems to have unloaded itself now. I've lost power toys.
Yeah, Bob Walker here. I've noticed a couple of comments in the chat there about people saying, remember back making mixtapes in the reel-to-reel and cassette days, and I remember that very fondly. You have to do all that real time. You basically have to play the tune on your record player or on a double cassette deck or all that, and just wait till the song records and all that. And it takes a while. So over the years, I made an awful lot of mixtapes, but each one of them took quite a bit of time. The nice thing about making a mixtape, and like I mentioned before, it's funny how that name is. Sort of hung on there through the digital age. It's sort of like how you tape a TV show on your PVR, even though there's no tape involved. But the nice thing about making a mixtape on a USB stick from your master directory is you can literally, using something like Total Commander especially, is you can have the USB stick in one window and you go through your master music directory, artist by artist and song by song. And literally within maybe 5 minutes, throw a couple hundred songs onto your USB stick. And I have very eclectic tastes in music, so I have a little bit of everything from classical to 1920s jazz to hard metal rock and roll to folk and everything in between. So I can make up a very eclectic mixtape there. And when I'm playing it in the car, if a song comes up that I'm just not in the mood for at the time, I just hit the next button on the steering wheel and poof, there you go. And put a lot of songs on the mixtape that aren't necessarily my favorite, but they're Cindy's favorites. So if Cindy's not in the car and it comes to one other song that I'm not particularly fond of, I can just hit the next. And when she's in the car and a song comes up that she's not particularly fond of, I can hit the next. But the idea is you can make up a mixed USB stick from your master music directory there very quickly and very easily. And wonderful thing about the USB stick, same as the old cassettes and whatever, is that you can record over it time after time after time and replace it. The one thing I've found is that, you know, when you have the nice big display screen in some of the current car infotainment systems, is if your tagging's not correct, it can get very annoying. So that's the one key thing that pushed me to re-tag a lot of the songs.
Okay, Bob Harris has a comment to share regarding Excel versus LibreOffice. Mr. Harris.
Sure. Thank you, Chris. You did a great thing a while back on LibreOffice and Excel. I'm not sure you covered this or not, but if you did, I'm sorry. I use drop-down boxes in Excel, and I liked Excel. And I tried hard to make the drop-down boxes – I have good vision, but – the drop-down box is a little larger. The font was so minuscule, you couldn't read it at a real fast. Anyway, the drop-down boxes in LibreOffice Calc are much larger, much easier to read than Excel. So if anybody has a problem with the drop-down boxes for your inputting or your reading stuff, the Libre Calc is far better than Excel in that regard.
When you say drop-down box, Bob, what whereabouts is that?
Well, I make my own drop-down boxes with data somewhere else. And so I want to have numbers in a column. Well, input, but either you do your own box or another table elsewhere, you select your options, right?
Yeah, it's like creating a pick list.
A pick list, yes. You can do them on the fly. There's a quick way and there's a more serious way, putting the list in another tab. Or you can do it, I can't say it how to do it, Chris knows probably too, but do a real, on the fly, there's a quick way. I can do that too, with just, I won't get involved in
that. Do you want to share your screen?
I wouldn't be ready for that offhand with that right now. No, sorry. Spontaneous.
Okay, well, you want to do a share next week?
Sure.
Okay.
Something, sure.
Yeah,
this is a tip, a very small thing, but I found it to be major. I did try to get the Excel larger, and I can see well. I'm pretty fortunate there, but they're just so small.
Yeah. And we have E.O. Driscoll has a question for Bob related to the best way to move audio off a cassette tape to digital.
Yeah, I mentioned that in one of my presentations a few weeks ago, and I'm just trying to find it now. If I can't find it in the next couple of minutes there, I'll mention it, but there's a one of NCH's programs that allows you to plug your turntable directly into the audio input on your computer without using a preamplifier or whatever else. Also allows you to plug the appropriate adapter cable into your cassette deck or your 8-track deck or whatever other source you may have, and record directly from that. And I'm just trying to find it now.
I pasted it into the chat, NCH's main product page, which has about 15 or 20 audio tools. I presume it's somewhere in there.
I'll dig that up for the next presentation here.
Okay.
Sitting down here. Whoops, that's not the one. Yeah, let me dig that up for next thing. But it's the.
We can cover that next week, Bob, because there are several ways to do that.
Yeah. The nice thing about the NCH tool is that a lot of the other tools that allow you to transfer your information from let's say an LP or whatever requires that somewhere in the process. For example, most LPs have Recording Industry of Association of America equalization, and most good quality turntables have a magnetic cartridge with a very low voltage input, so you have to have a preamp with the equalization to use these other tools. The nice thing about the NCH one is you can just plug the turntable directly into your computer using the appropriate adapter cable, and it'll do all the preamplification, equalization, and everything for you. But it'll also do, you can also plug the appropriate adapter cable in and do your cassettes, do your 8-tracks, do your reel-to-reel tapes or whatever else is necessary. And so the only thing you need besides the software is a simple cable. And that's the nice thing about it is you don't have to have all these other devices, because I tried doing transfers from LPs a couple of years ago, and I got the stupid little preamplifier and everything else, and it was just a nightmare to use it all. So I haven't tried the NCH tool for this particular thing yet. Doing the LPs, but I'll do it when we get the basement cleared out enough so I can get to my LP collection.
Well, for those of us who still have a hi-fi system, it's really easy just to put a cable in between the amplifier and the computer's sound card, and then use software to record it. Okay, well, we'll talk about things like that next week, maybe. So we're over the magic hour, so let me just say that our next, you said, put the wrong button here. Let's go to this one. All right, why is nothing working?
Well, Alan's finding that. Edward Moransky asked for Bob to recap software uses in music management. So just going through, the decks are all on the OPCUG website. So you can take a look at that, seeing as we're out of time for tonight. I don't see any other questions or anything like that in the chat. So if Alan has found his controls.
It's a mystery. One of life's mysteries.
Alt tab till you get to your deck.
The Windows key, nothing works.
Alt tab doesn't work? That's bizarre.
That's slow motion right now.
Well, if you want, I can bring up the last final slides.
Oh, I think it just changed. Or is that you?
Oh, yeah, it did. Yep, got it.
So the idea was that in September it could be the first meeting of our regular meeting series. And this one's going to be a member's favorite. So if you have anything you'd like to share with the group, a particular program that you like a sound recording program, a piece of hardware that you've acquired that is just so amazing, we all have to know about it, or maybe just a tweak to the operating system and how to drive power toys properly, or even presentations properly. If you're looking for like a 10 to 20 minute presentation or something like that, we're really flexible. And if you just send us a note with the topic, we'll put in a slot for you for next time. And I can't change the slide again. So that's it for me. next week, it will be April the 3rd, I believe, will be our next Q&A. And I hope we see you all then. And by then, I should have my computer working again.
Thanks, Alan. Okay, thanks, everybody, for coming out. We'll see you next week.